It's time for the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November the 14th. I'm Joy Cardine, back from my assignment at Madison's WISC-TV morning show. I was the special guest anchor for the morning show, along with my co-anchor and husband, Rob Starbuck. Thanks to Jean Purcell for filling in for me. We had a lot of fun, including with our two guests for the Week in Review this hour. They were there with us earlier this morning on Channel 3 for about 4 minutes or so, and we promised to continue this discussion on the radio, so here we are. Ed Garvey, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Rick Burke, thanks for your time this morning,
good
too.
Good morning, Joy. Nice to be
here.
Were
you there this morning?
I was. I was the one saying all the really correct things.
I'm sorry.
The really smart, insightful things. Remember me, Ed?
I hope I T-voted.
You did both did double duty this morning, so thanks very much. We thought it would be nice to just get a little snippet from you on TV. We only had about 4 minutes on TV, but we have about 54 minutes here. So let's start, though, with the lead story this morning on Channel 3. A source in the governor's office says the Obama transition team has contacted Governor Doyle about, we're not sure exactly what, but presumably a possible spot in the Obama administration on the cabinet. Ed Garvey, what do you think?
Well, I would think that the Obama administration would talk to every Democratic governor that had supported him, as well as other folks in state government. I have no idea. I think Jim Doyle's in a tough spot because we have a $5 billion deficit looming. And for him to leave at this point would not be too popular a move, I would guess, with most people. So my instinct is that he won't take a job outside of Madison, but you never know.
Yeah. Or do you think he will, Rick?
Well, he seems uniquely qualified for Washington after running the state into a $5 billion hole, doesn't he, Ed? I mean, I think he's well suited to go to Washington and fit right in with the crowd out there.
Now, first off, you've just eliminated yourself from a job in the Obama administration because of your sarcasm.
I think that's on the questionnaire that they're using.
Maybe that was the contact.
But I don't know. We were talking about that on TV, too, and we were joking about the fact that he's also been mentioned as possible ambassador to Ireland, but we know he doesn't drink, so that's not... I mean, I think that's a deal breaker, isn't it, Ed Fryer?
No.
I mean, you could go to Ireland as the ambassador, but I don't think Jim Doyle could go to Ireland as the ambassador. So, I don't know. We'll see. I think it would be welcome news if Jim Doyle got a ticket to Washington, frankly.
Well, who knows? But I think Janet Napolitano from Arizona is a more likely candidate for attorney general. I would guess that Governor Doyle would not want to take a job that would be viewed as sort of a lateral move. He'd like to do something. I mean, if anyone is offered a cabinet position, of course, they would take it.
So, in other words, he won't be the policy analyst in the Department of Education or anything like that, then?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah,
I would guess not.
Wouldn't Ed, you think that he'd want to get out of this state with a $5 billion budget shortfall?
Well, I've got two answers, one that I'm going to say and the other one I'm just going to think.
Keep to yourself.
We're in really a lot of trouble, and it doesn't seem to be an oversupply of deep thinking that's going on around the state as to how we're going to deal with our problems. It seems like all the focus is on whether people from Milwaukee are on the Joint Finance Committee or leaders of the Assembly are from other parts of the state. Are the Republicans in control of the Democrats? We have to face the fact that for years we've had this Republican mantra that there'll be no new taxes and no increased taxes, and Governor Doyle has fallen into that trap. They're going to have to raise taxes. They're going to have to deal with the services that are required, and to do that is going to take some extraordinary leadership. It would be a tough thing to do to leave at this point and hand it off to the lieutenant governor and say, here, you handle it, and I'll be back later.
Well, the one thing I think Ed and I both agree on is that there's a real shortage of bold, creative thinking in the Capitol here in Wisconsin, and that troubles me because, as Ed correctly pointed out, I think there is a desire to continue this rhetoric about how we're not going to raise income taxes or sales taxes and all that sort of stuff, and I agree they perhaps shouldn't be raised, but at the same time, then you have to think in a very different way about how the state of Wisconsin is spending money and look for ways that we can do things in a much different way and a more cost-effective way. What I fear is that if the Doyle administration, as they approach this $5 billion hole, says we're not going to raise all those taxes. What that says to me is that instead of spending $75 a year to renew my license plate on my cars, I'll be spending $250 a year. And the state annual park pass, which is now, what, $25, $28 or whatever, will be $75. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that you're going to see if they don't actually take a more comprehensive look at how we spend money in the state of Wisconsin.
And also cuts at the university. And of course, I think that's exactly the wrong way to go. We should be the education state, and everyone in the state who can make it should get a free education. But we're building prisons. We have oversupply of prisons. The cost of prisons is now crowding out other priorities. And so the university president says we have to look at hiring. That's, I'm sure, true. But at the same time, I think we've got to deal with the fact that some of these prisons ought to be closed and the money saved and find alternative programs to incarceration.
Well, and I think the other thing that compounds the problem in the Capitol is now you've got the Democrats in control of the executive branch, the legislative branch. Both houses of the legislature are now in Democratic hands. And there's a lot of people that have a long list of things they want to spend money on. And the Democrats haven't so far been very good at saying to people, you know, we can't afford to do that. And so that concerns me, too, because not only do we have this $5 billion hole, but now we've got a long deferred list of spending programs that the Democrats want to pursue, and that's going to make it even more difficult.
Let me put a hold on the talk of state issues, and we'll get back to that. But back to the Obama transition and possible cabinet appointments, the other news this morning is that apparently Hillary Clinton is on the list for Secretary of State. Do you think that's a good idea, Ed Garvey?
I do. I think it would be a brilliant move by Obama. I think it takes care of any lingering doubts with respect to the divisions within the party. She's an extraordinarily bright, talented woman who could, I think, be a significant help to the administration as we change our whole the attitude of the world toward this country. So I think it would be a good move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's already been tested under fire on the tarmac in Bosnia, right? Where she was. Never mind. That didn't happen. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. But
thank you, Governor Palin.
Yeah, I think she'd be a fine choice. I mean, she's obviously a very skilled politician. She's had experience on the world stage. And so, when I heard that this morning, I thought, too, you know, that actually makes a fair amount of sense. So we'll see if it happens. But I think it would be a good choice on Obama's part.
We hear that the transition team is also looking at possible Republicans to put on the cabinet. Rick Berg, are there any that you'd like to see on?
And is that the reason you had a suit on this morning?
No, that is not the reason I had a suit on. I had to be on TV in HD. One of the impressive things about what we've seen so far from the transition team, the Obama transition team, is they genuinely seem to be looking for the best people they can find for the jobs that they need to fill in Washington. And they seem to be open to Republicans as well as Democrats. And I think that would be terrific. You know, not only, I was thinking too, when we were talking about Hillary Clinton earlier, Secretary of State, you know, I think it would also be a brilliant move on Obama's part to offer the defense job to John McCain. Bring John McCain as your defense secretary and tell him, look, you know, we want to wind down the conflict in Iraq and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I think that would be a marvelous thing for Obama to do, to reach out to John McCain and bring him in.
At a time like this, you really miss Curtis LeMay.
Bombs Away LeMay, I think, is the proper name for
him. I don't think that John McCain would add anything to the process.
Oh, I think he would. I think he'd add some. I think he would actually
Chuck
bring
Hagel.
Well, I think McCain, or Hagel, would bring some credibility to the Obama administration on the issue of defense. And so if there was a way to bring Hillary Clinton and John McCain into the cabinet, I think that would be sort of a remarkable statement to the American people, frankly.
Yeah. How fast does President-elect Obama have to select a Treasury secretary, given our economic mess, Ed Garvey?
Well, I wrote on FightingBob.com the other day that I think they should move up the timetable. I mean, the Constitution says January 20th, but I think they ought to get moved into the White House and get the cabinet appointed and get them working. We can't afford two more months of drift.
Well, sure, they could just move the Bushes into the Willard Hotel or something, couldn't they, for a while?
Or just have the whatever they have to do. I mean, the fact
temporary
is
housing.
I don't think that we can have the country without a leader. And George Bush has checked out. I mean, he is gone. He doesn't care. He doesn't have any enthusiasm for the job. And so Obama, I think, has to grab the reins now. I mean, General Motors could be in bankruptcy by the time January 20th rolls around. I think something's going to have to happen sooner than that.
Well, the other problem, George Bush surfaced this week to make a speech about free enterprise and the strength of the American. I mean, after we just bailed out, or, you know, every big corporation in the United States, and Washington is getting involved in the auto industry now. I mean, we've already corrupted the free market system, it seems to me, with the bailout, but yet he's still standing up praising it as something we need to cherish and hold on to.
Well, Henry Paulson, I think, could screw up a two-car funeral. I mean, you know, you listen to him, $700 billion, and we don't know where it went. And now he's saying... Well,
they still don't know where they want it to go,
right.
It seems.
There's no... We had to act within 48 hours or the world was going to come to an end. They acted, and now they say, well, where's the money? And they say, well... Yeah, it's doing its job.
Well, I swear to God that they're making it up by the seat of their pants in Washington. And I mean both Republicans and Democrats. Now, I hope that will change with the incoming administration so that there's at least the perception of a clear direction. But right now, the feeling I get from Washington, and I think a lot of people around the country are getting it too, is that they are just flying by the seat of their pants on this thing. And it's a huge problem.
Well, there's no leader. I mean,
well, there's
the fact
no leader.
Is the president's checked out.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think Paulson is the right guy at Treasury either. But getting back to Joy's question about Obama and appointing a Treasury secretary, I think it would help calm the markets if Obama named a credible choice for Treasury sooner rather than later.
Is Larry Summers credible?
Well, I think in credentials, yes. He seems to be very credible. I know he had some controversy, you know, when he was at the university about some remarks he made that continue to dog him. But on paper, I think he's a credible choice. But I don't know if they're going to think that he's perhaps a little too hot for the job. But mm-hmm. There's a lot of good people. And Paul Volcker has been mentioned. Paul Volcker now is getting to be, 81, 82? I don't know if he's up to the job. But
that used to sound a lot older to me.
yeah. Suddenly it doesn't sound so old to Ed, but there's a lot of, I think, good names out there. But I do think, again, getting back to your question, Joy, mm-hmm. Obama's going to be well served if he gets a name out there pretty quickly.
You have a word on Larry Summers, Ed? Or?
Well, there are other people in this country that could be named, I think. And you know, there's a temptation, I'm sure, for Rahm Emanuel to be looking only at people with Clinton administration or Bush administration credentials. This is a much larger country than that, and I think we can bring in some fresh ideas. I mean, one of the things that occurs to me is every time they talk about a bailout, it's to bail out the banks, the lenders, the frauds, the people who have gotten us into this mess. The crisis we have is that if General Motors goes under, we could lose 2 million jobs. Now, that's not make-believe. It's not a probability. It's a certainty that brings about a deep recession. Somehow there has to be a Manhattan Project in terms of job creation. Just as surely as Paulson and others said we had to rescue the banks, we have to rescue the job market.
We'll talk more about bailouts in just a moment. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking with two guests. Two of your favorite guests and mine too, Ed Garvey, senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil & McGilvery and publisher of FightingBob.com, and Rick Berg, board member at Wisconsin Common Cause, former appointee of the Thompson administration, and a contributing columnist for Isthmus. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join in with an observation from the news this week, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned coming up this afternoon. It's At Issue with Ben Marins, and after 4, his regular Friday feature, Your Views on the News. Ben and a news analyst will be on hand to discuss your thoughts about the week's most significant news story. We're reviewing all the significant political news stories of the week with our two guests, Ed Garvey and Rick Berg. The week started out with President-elect Barack Obama visiting President George Bush in the White House. They talked about the transition and other issues, including the economy and this proposed bailout of the auto industry, of the Big Three. Ed Garvey, should our government bail out the Big Three?
Well, they have to. I opposed the Chrysler bailout years ago when Lee Iacocca went to Congress and said, you got to help us. But Iacocca had a plan. It worked. They did well. Now we are faced with an enormous problem. If you lose 2 million jobs as a result of, the bankruptcy of General Motors, this economy is in trouble for years, certainly through the first Obama administration. So I think there has to be kind of a, as I said, a Manhattan Project to say, what do we do to save these jobs? How do we review NAFTA? How do we stop the bleeding and to get these people back to work? Because you can't just watch 2 million people out on the streets losing their homes and all the rest.
Well, I think the big three, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, are too important to let them go down the tubes. They're too important to the U.S. economy for a lot of reasons. But what concerns me about it is that if Washington bails them out, to what extent does Washington want to start controlling the criteria for manufacturing at GM or Ford or Chrysler? And I think the worst thing that could happen is, I mean, we've got 435 members of Congress, 100 people in the U.S. Senate. I'd hate to think we've got 535 people who think they need to start acting as the CEO at GM and start telling them how to run their...
Well, wouldn't you have Barney Frank do that?
Yeah. That's the scariest thing. That was the scary headline of the week when I saw Barney Frank crafting bailout bill for big three automakers. That was the frightening headline of the week.
Let me bring in a caller, Kathy in Watertown. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm for, you know, let's bail them out. We might as well bail everybody out, you know. And if we become, you know, take over the big three as a government and work on it, there's the energy, you know, we can solve some of our energy plans, too. We might as well put our money in there, get some smart people in there to, you know, run the company correctly, diversify it, break it off into smaller, you know, smaller units and that. Might as well. We're doing everything else that way, and we can't afford any more job losses. But, you know, it's just already way too much. And the seniors, we just need to get it fixed.
All right. Thank you, Kathy.
You know, you look at a $5 billion deficit in Wisconsin. $28 billion in California?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Big.
You know, we're talking about a collapse of the economy. And so the caller, I think, makes the point. We can't afford any more job loss. Something has to happen here that goes beyond rescuing bankers and their bonuses and so on that they did under the other bailout.
Yeah. But part of what concerns me, though, we're on this slippery slope. I mean, I agree that we can't let the big three automakers go under, but everyone's getting in line now for federal money. Look at American Express. They're getting in line now. They want a handout. Everybody wants a handout. And if the United States government is going to nationalize the economy of the United States, what's the difference between us and the old Soviet Union? Isn't that what the Soviet Union did? I mean, what path are we on here?
Well, we're not on that path.
Well, we're nationalizing all of the major industries in the U.S.
Well, that
we're making them beholden to Washington and government for their existence.
Yeah, well, what kind of strings need to be attached, though, Ed Garvey, to whatever $50 billion in car bailout money? Do we need to tell these car makers, make better cars or what?
It would be the high point of absurdity for me to lay out the plans right now. I'm not smart enough to do it, but I do think that if we're talking about hybrids and the need for better gas mileage and smaller cars, that somehow or other people can come up with the right rules and regulations. But somehow this unfettered capitalism without an antitrust department that breaks up these monopolies hasn't worked. And we're in such a deep hole at this point. As one wise person said, when you're in that hole, you stop digging. I mean, that ought to be the first step. I don't like the idea of a bailout, Rick, and I know you don't either, but I'm not sure what else to do. I mean, maybe we could collapse a Fighting Bob Fest and apply for money.
No. First mention of Fighting Bob Fest.
Get a handout.
Well, you know, but the problem, there's so many dimensions to this problem. I mean, the U.S. automakers have for decades now been insulated from competitive pressures. I mean, there was the first crisis in the 1970s when Japanese and other foreign auto manufacturers started making inroads into the U.S. economy with better products at more reasonable prices, more reliable products, and the U.S. automakers were slow to respond to that, and then they sort of got a pass in a policy sense from a lot of the politicians in Washington. We would have been better off if we had just let them compete with the foreign manufacturers, and in the competitive process, they would have been forced, I think, to produce better products. But then we compounded the problem with bad policies. I mean, even in the IRS tax code, there was essentially a subsidy for buying SUVs and big vehicles like that. I mean, so we've sort of done this to ourselves. And so for the politicians to, again, much like the housing issue, to stand aside and say, oh, gosh, gee willikers, how'd we get to where we are? Well, they were part of the problem, too.
This from the New York Times. The prospects of a government rescue for the floundering American automakers dwindled yesterday as Democratic congressional leaders conceded they would face potentially insurmountable Republican opposition during a lame duck session next week. Then what, Ed Garvey?
Well, I read that story this morning, and I said, well, apparently it's all over. I mean, in terms of the possibilities of doing something in the next 2 months, and if we don't do that, GM will file for bankruptcy. I think that there are a lot of people on the GM side who would like to see bankruptcy and ask the bankruptcy court to nullify the United Auto Worker contracts, the collective bargaining agreements, and come out of bankruptcy union-free. And I think that's the real target from the Wall Street Journal folks.
Yeah, well, that could be. I mean, that there is that school of thought out there that that's what they're really trying to do. But
because it's those darn workers who are getting paid too much, not the CEO.
And I don't know if GM and Ford and Chrysler can make it into 2009 without some assistance infused into the corporate structure soon. So, I mean, it's high risk. It's high risk.
Gary in Green Bay joins us. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I think a lot of people are looking at this in the wrong direction. I just heard the gentleman before me talk about getting rid of the unions. But I think I think you need to consider this idea that if you have 100 people out there making $20 an hour, you've got a large dollar amount that you can tax, and it goes into the purse of the government, and you can pay for a lot of things with this. Now, if you take all of these people and get rid of their high-paying jobs and putting them out at minimum wage, $6 an hour someplace in a McDonald's, they probably don't even have enough income in a year for you to get any taxes on. How are you going to pay your bills? You know, the idea of trickle-down and getting rid of high union costs is what's killed it. We've killed the golden goose.
I sure hope I didn't give you the impression that I'm in favor of destroying the UAW or the collective bargaining agreements, and I couldn't agree with the caller more. I mean, the fact is that if you have people who are making a good living, they have a nice house, their kids are going to go to college, things are doing fine, but we've got to have national health care to take that cost off the automakers. We've got to have a living wage, I think, throughout this country to get more money in the hands of those who are going to spend it. And we really have to say, okay, let's go back to the days when if you made more than $2 million or $3 million a year, you pay 80 or 90% of that into the Treasury. So somehow we've got to take some drastic steps here, and it's not by destroying the union movement.
Yeah, I don't blame the workers at GM or Ford or Chrysler for the situation we're in today. I blame the corporate structure at those organizations.
Do you have a pen? I'd like to write this down.
Yeah, I mean it's that's where the problem is coming from at the corporate level and the decisions that have been made in terms of how the companies have responded over the last two or three decades.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit here. There's a lot of hand-wringing and soul-searching going on in the Republican Party these days. The GOP governors are meeting this week in Florida, and lots of attention being placed on Sarah Palin. In fact, I think Sarah Palin has been interviewed by practically every national news source this week about whether she plans to be running in 2012. What are your thoughts on the future for the GOP? We'll start with Rick Berg, and is Sarah Palin a prominent member of that?
Well, I think she is. I like Sarah Palin. I know she needs to be polished a little bit, and she's got a learning curve. But she's got, I think, a very...
Take your time.
I think she's got a very effective way of connecting with a lot of regular folk in this country. And I think that's refreshing, and I think it's good, and I think it's healthy for the body politic. I don't know what kind of a future she has in the Republican Party. She's clearly going to be a player. At this point, I know there have been some surveys that have come out in the last week that showed like 50 or 60% of the Republican survey wanted her to be the nominee in 2012. I'm not sure I'm ready to embrace that notion yet. But, you know, she had a great platform. She's got good visibility. I think the question is, what is she going to do with it over the next couple of years?
Well,
and we'll see. I mean, she could turn into a bigger national joke. I don't think she's a joke, but I'm saying that's the way she was sort of characterized this fall. She could turn into a bigger national joke, or she could turn into a very credible and potent political force. I think we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out.
Well, I think we owe her a lot. I mean, without her spending at Neiman Marcus, the economy could have really been in the tank this quarter.
Well, she was doing her part.
She was doing her part. I think that she, the selection of Sarah Palin by John McCain cost him the presidency. It's probably the most irresponsible move I've ever seen a political politician take. She is so unqualified that it's just ridiculous to even think about. I mean, she doesn't know whether Africa is a continent or a country. I mean, things of this nature, for heaven's sakes, we're going back to some other era. So I think she should be said, thank you very much, go back to Alaska, and the Republicans ought to come up with a serious candidate, whether it's Mitt Romney or Huckabee or someone else.
I heard Tim Pawlenty is Minnesota. A lot of people are thinking he's the future of the Republican
Party. He's bright and attractive. I mean, he's got a future in the Republican Party. But just getting back to Sarah Palin for a second, especially on the Africa country or continent question.
You don't know either?
I'm still trying to figure it out. But there have been reports that have come out in the last week from people who sat in on that meeting where that information allegedly came from, who claimed that there was no confusion on her part as to whether it was a continent or a country. So I think there's a lot of things that are being said about Sarah Palin that are unfair and untrue by people in the Republican Party, and I think that's unforgivable.
Well, McCain staffers, the reports are, we're trying to say, don't blame us for this crummy campaign. Let's blame Sarah Palin. You don't think that was a part of it, Ed?
Oh, I think that's part of it. I mean, let's face it, once somebody loses, people start pointing fingers because they don't want to take the blame, particularly the consultants who have to be on to the next candidate to get a job.
Hey, it looks like, though, Sarah Palin may not be able to run for a special election to replace Ted Stevens in Alaska. Maybe not. Right now, Stevens has fallen behind in the recount for that Senate seat. And the thought was is that if he won, he could resign and Sarah Palin could call a special election and then run for that seat. And that's not going to happen. What do you make of that situation in Alaska, Ed Garvey?
To some extent, I think we have to look at the whole question of how votes are cast in presidential elections. I mean, here we are weeks after the election, and thousands of votes are still uncounted in Alaska. There should be some federal standards, it seems to me, with respect to voting. There ought to be a way to make sure that we know who's voted and get the votes counted. I have seen a report by Stevens' former press secretary that he thinks that Begich is going to win that seat. I think it would be good for everyone. I mean, the idea of Palin in the Senate, I doubt that she would run, because to be in Washington and have to take positions on issues all the time would take away the one thing that she's got.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what Washington would add to her resume. I mean, she's positioned now. She's got a national profile. She's the governor of Alaska. She gets to sort of run the show in Alaska. And I think history has shown us that being a governor is actually a better springboard to national office, president or vice president, than coming from the U.S. Senate. I mean, Obama, after all, was the first sitting member of the United States Senate since John Kennedy in 1960 to successfully run for the presidency. So Washington is not, as I say, Congress in particular, been a terribly good springboard for people with ambition. So my feeling is Palin would be better off staying in Alaska. I mean, she can certainly travel the speaking circuit and appear here and there, and she's got a voice now on the national stage that she didn't have before September. So
she can call the president of France.
She can call the president of France if she can get the real one on the phone.
Do you have any thoughts on the recount in Minnesota between Norm Coleman and Al Franken?
Well, I am so biased in favor of Franken because Coleman said at one point, 99% of the time he's a better senator than Paul Wellstone. And I thought, boy, you know, whoever we could get to defeat Norm Coleman would be my candidate. So I probably should defer to Rick. But I think after the recount, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah, it's only 200 votes separating them. Yeah.
Well, if I had to pick a former Saturday Night Live person to go to the Senate, I'd rather have Dennis Miller there than Al Franken.
Oh.
But
no.
I think it'd be more fun, Ed. But you know, in Minnesota, there's some really troubling things that are coming out about that. I mean, there was the incident regarding the 32 absentee ballots found in the trunk of somebody's car, all of which just by happenstance had votes on them for Al Franken, none for Norm Coleman. I mean, it's just, it's looking very suspicious. And so, you know, again, you come down to the integrity of the election process. And I hope that when they get around to the recount in Minnesota, that they can do it in a credible way, because the last thing we need is to, you know, cast more doubt on the integrity of the election process. But there's some funny things that have been going on across the border.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with Rick Berg and Ed Garvey. This is our Week in Review. You can join in if you have some thoughts on the news this week. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We've been talking about the economy and the proposed auto bailout and the future for the Republican Party. We'll also talk some more about state issues before we're done. But we welcome your thoughts and questions about the news of the week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Veronica Rickert is with you after 9 o'clock. She'll be talking with the author of a new article, Green Living Deluxe, How the Environmental Movement Went Way, Way Upscale. So talk about that after 9 o'clock this morning. We are reviewing the news of the week with Ed Garvey and Rick Berg, and with you if you would like to join in. This story caught my attention. It actually happened after the election last week, but I thought that it would be fun to talk about. Former Governor Tommy Thompson is on a mission to save Wisconsin, and he may even run for governor again to get the job done. Thompson says he wants to revitalize the Republican Party in the state. He said, "It's too early to tell if I will run again, but I can tell you I will be helping to rebuild the Republican Party in Wisconsin and get it back to where it was when I was governor," he said on election night. So does that scare you, Ed Garvey?
Yeah, it's Halloween. here comes Tommy Thompson back. I'm sure that's thrilling to the young Republicans who are in charge of the minority in the legislature. It seems like every time there's an election, Tommy threatens to come back and run. And the last time he ran was for president, and that didn't go so well. So I don't think that Tommy Thompson is going to come back and run.
He's got a lot on his plate right now, too, making a lot of money.
He's
making a lot of money. Yeah, yeah. Doing well. But
he could help by just giving the Republicans a lot of his
cash.
They could tithe.
Well, Tommy Thompson is still the preeminent Republican in Wisconsin, even though he hasn't
been. Bill Krause.
Well, Bill's up there, too. But Tommy is still the preeminent Republican in the state of Wisconsin. He could certainly be quite helpful in terms of rebuilding the Republican Party in Wisconsin, and God knows we need it. It's a party that in many ways seems to have lost its way, not only in Wisconsin, but at the national level. They've moved away from principles that really brought them the majorities that they enjoyed in the 90s, not only here in Wisconsin, but in Washington. And so I think they need someone to help lead them out of the wilderness. In Wisconsin, there's nobody better than Tommy Thompson to help do that. Whether he runs again or not, I don't know. I mean, as you recall, there was talk and noise back in 2006 about the possibility that Tommy Thompson might take on Jim Doyle in that race, and that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. But if Tommy wants to come back in 2010 or whenever and run again, there are a lot of Republicans that would welcome him with open arms and be pretty excited about that prospect.
Yeah, and do you, when you said that the Republican Party really lost its way, not only nationally, but in Wisconsin, what did you mean, Rick?
Well, I mean, if you look back at the Reagan record, smaller government, lower government spending, cutting the bureaucracy and all of the stuff that Republicans, I think, we thought believed in the 80s and the 90s, in the early 90s. Proved not to be true. I think in Washington, when they became the majority in Washington, they became sort of like the incumbent party, much like the Democrats do, and they sort of enjoyed handing out money and favors and all of this sort of stuff, and they lost sight of what brought them there. And I think they lost sight of the principles that the people embraced that sent them there. And I think the same is true in Wisconsin. And I think in Wisconsin, much like at the national level, the party has been sort of taken over by a lot of social issues that are interesting and important, I think, to some members of the Republican Party, but perhaps not even all members of the Republican Party, and they may not have much appeal to independents or moderates. And so the extent to which the party has become captive of those interests, I would argue, has hurt its ability to attract voters. And they've got to do something about that and get back to the traditional issues that the Republican Party used to stand for.
Yeah. I think it would be hard to say what the Republican Party in Wisconsin stands for. I mean, if they could lay out a plan for the next 4 to 8 years, what would it be? I have no idea. They've been negative, negative, negative. The religious right has dictated their agenda. I mean, think about Wisconsin is famous throughout the world for stem cell research, and here you have the Right to Life folks trying to stop stem cell research from taking place. The value, of course, is just indisputable. So I think there isn't really a Republican Party so much as a group that gets together once a year and listens to somebody speak. And the Democratic Party isn't much different. I think we're in a post-party period where look at Barack Obama. He didn't rely on the Democratic Party to get elected. He created his own party through the internet and through his own on-the-ground get-out-the-vote effort and so on.
And I think that's where a lot of conservatives are right now with the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But getting back to your point, Ed, about the lack of big ideas or ideas that matter, I think that is a problem for both parties in the state of Wisconsin. We seem to be fighting the same small petty battles that really don't matter to most people. They may matter to the base of the Democratic Party or the base of the Republican Party, but I the issues we continue to fight about don't seem to be on the minds of most people. And I think most people in the state of Wisconsin really want to see both parties working together to come up with ideas that matter, big ideas that solve real problems, creative, out-of-the-box thinking, whatever label you want to put on it. And there just isn't much of that around.
Yeah. Do you think, Rick Berg, that if Tommy Thompson doesn't run for governor again, who else is on, thinking about this for
Rick.
2010?
Yeah, yeah. Name some names, Rick. Come on. We dare you to name a couple. Well, there's Scott Walker in Milwaukee, you know, county executive, who I think has gubernatorial ambitions. Paul Ryan would be a great candidate for governor if he chose to pursue that path. Paul Ryan has become a very respected member of the United States Congress, and I think he's someone that is a thinker and does have a platform for the future for the Republican Party. So the Republicans need to listen to Paul Ryan. Whether or not he's interested in statewide office or the governor's office, maybe he wants to go to the Senate, I don't know. But that's a bright star there.
Well, Paul Ryan was...
And Tommy, of course. Tommy, if Tommy wants to come back,
come on.
Tommy becomes the man.
Who do you see on the Republican side, Ed? Anybody running for governor?
I have to agree with Rick that Paul Ryan has emerged as someone that is well-respected within the certainly Republican ranks, but I think also as within Democratic ranks. He's a bright guy, and he seems to have a fairly common touch. So he is probably the leading person, I would guess, although you mentioned Scott Walker in Milwaukee. I just think he's taken this county to the brink of bankruptcy. I think he could do the same thing for Wisconsin.
Well, and there's also a tradition of Milwaukee politicians not doing terribly well in statewide races.
Unless they run against people like me.
Well, you know what I mean. Tom Barrett tried it, and others have tried it, and there's always this sort of bias, against Milwaukee politicians running statewide. But that's not to say that Scott Walker couldn't overcome that, but he'd have a tough road.
To the phones, Gay in Madison. Hi, Gay.
Yeah, we're done with toxic, tainted Thompson. We're done with him. He tried during the Bush administration, the first big crisis that came up. He totally embarrassed himself and us. He was inept. We don't need him back in Wisconsin. We need Barbara Lawton, perhaps, who is really an enlightened person. Change has come, and we've got to get rid of this dinosaurus way of thinking about politics. You know, it's starting from the top down. People have expressed what they want in government, and it's not the same old, same old.
I agree. And what we need to have is public financing, because let's just take a look at what's coming up with Shirley Abrahamson up for re-election in April. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce will again pour $6 to $10 million into defeat her, so they have another seat on the court. This is the kind of thing that has to stop. And unless we have public financing, you should take Barbara Lawton or all sorts of other people who might run. They'll be locked out because they can't raise the kind of money that you need to establish yourself. And the media says that unless you have a lot of money, you're not a serious candidate. We also, I think, have to look 4 years from now. I don't think there'll be a major newspaper in the state. And so there's going to have to be a change in whole the way the campaigns are managed.
Well, just a couple of things. One is I won't address Tommy Thompson's tenure in Washington, but when he was governor of the state of Wisconsin, I believe he was certainly one of the greatest governors Wisconsin has ever had. And Tommy, when he was governor, proved that he had an ability to work with members of both parties. And he did not push an ideological agenda. I think much of what has afflicted the Republican Party has come with some of the stuff that's been pushed in the years after Tommy left. So I would certainly defend Tommy's ability to govern the state effectively and to work with members of both parties in terms of coming up with some pretty creative solutions to problems. But on Ed's point about public financing, that I think is an interesting topic too, because you look at this presidential campaign, and for all the wonderful things about Barack Obama, and I can see that there are many things that are very appealing about him, he really sort of put a knife into public financing this year, Ed. I mean, he really did. I mean, when he said that he was going to take public financing and then decided he was not going to take public financing, and he raised just a ton of money and spent it, I think the message to everybody became, if you really want to be successful, if you want to win, don't accept public financing. And a year ago, we were talking, Common Cause and others were talking about the possibility of a $1 billion race this year for president. Well, Barack Obama, all by himself, I think, spent about $750 to $800 million. So, I mean, he just shattered it. Now, you know, you can, as I say, there are many things to like about Barack Obama. He's a very appealing personality. But the damage I think he did to the public financing movement was severe. Yeah. And I would also, if I could add one more thing in that regard, I also think that Mike Bloomberg did great damage to term limits in New York City by setting those aside, saying the problems are so great, I just need to run again. So it's not been a good year for the reform message.
Tommy Thompson was the first person to run for governor and say that he didn't want public financing, and it destroyed the system. And Barack Obama has done the same thing. And, you know, anybody who thinks that there could be another Barack Obama phenomenon, I think, is dreaming. This was an unusual situation that will never occur again. I doubt that it'll ever occur again. But it doesn't help the people who are running at the local level, or for Congress or for the Senate or for governor or for the legislature, that somebody at the top can raise $1 billion. We've got to have publicly financed campaigns and take the campaigns back from the private sector.
You know, a couple of other things I wanted to talk to both of you about before we ran out of time. Right now we have, for the first time in 22 years, both houses of the state legislature and the governor's office occupied by Democrats. We talked earlier this hour about that $5 billion deficit, but that aside for now, Ed Garvey, what do you hope state legislature and governor can accomplish?
Well, I think they can start to set the tone, and they can do something about school financing and stop punishing teachers for being teachers. They've got to do something about law and order that doesn't mean more prisons. They've got to get people out of those prisons. They have to spend more money on education. And I think they have to get off this nonsense of saying no higher taxes and no new taxes, because the simple fact is we have enormous problems that have to be dealt with, and you can't just do it with smoke and mirrors. So if you're part of the disability community, you're going to be cut substantially under this budget. These people need help, and they need the support of the people in the legislature, and I think it'll come from the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a couple of things. One is spending more money on education. I'm not aware of any credible study that shows that there's any direct correlation between the amount of money spent on education and the results that come out of that educational system. So I think we have to be careful about just throwing money at that issue simply on faith that it's going to do some good. Secondly, in terms of the challenges, again, when you put the Wisconsin situation into the context of what's going on nationally, people are hurting all across this country. People are having trouble holding onto their homes. They're having trouble paying for their energy costs. They're having trouble paying for food that they need to put on the table and all of the essentials. And so I think in that environment, the worst possible thing is for government to raise taxes on people. And I fear that's what the Democrats are now going to try to do in Wisconsin now that they control the entire political process.
WMC has the court.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you know what the Democrats are going to. I mean, there's a long list of things they want to do.
Let me get another caller in, Chris in Oshkosh. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Just very briefly, wondering how much do you think the problems with Wisconsin's budget issues are? What's the state cost?
We're losing you, Chris, but I know what you're getting at. Chris, and I'm going to address this to you first. Rick, you had made a comment earlier in the hour that, that Doyle drove the economy down the tubes. Chris says the problems we're experiencing here in Wisconsin are because of the national economy, don't you?
Just confess error.
Yeah, just confess error and move on. Well, all I know is that in the political arena, remember when Jim Doyle ran for governor back in 2002 for the first term? And at that point, the McCallum administration, Scott McCallum had taken over for Tommy Thompson. We had a $3.2 billion deficit at that point in the state budget. And of course, Doyle, blamed McCallum for all of that. It didn't matter that much of that, I think, came about in the post 9/11 world, and that was part of a national downturn as well. And the state took a serious downturn. Now, I would argue that McCallum contributed to that by some of the decisions he made. But anyway, when Doyle ran in 2002, that was Scott McCallum's problem. So, and then we just watched a presidential campaign where Obama and others referred to the national situation as the result of 8 years of failed Bush policies. Now, that's probably not a complete waterfront description of what's happened either. So my point is that if after 5 years of the Doyle administration, we are now in a $5 billion budget hole, I think it's fair to refer to that as 5 years of failed Jim Doyle policies.
Is that fair, Ed?
End the occupation of Iraq, stop the war in Afghanistan, get this money back into our economy, and you won't have to blame Jim Doyle or anybody else. I think we can stimulate this economy. But when we spend trillions of dollars on foreign adventures that lead nowhere, we can't afford to do the things we have to do.
We have less than a minute. There is talk that there will be an oil tax. This is a tax on the oil companies, supposedly, to help Wisconsin's budget. There will be a hospital tax that will help. But beyond that, do you think taxes, a sales tax or the income tax, will be raised in Wisconsin, Ed?
I think they're going to have to. And, for example, to add different groups into the sales tax. My profession, the legal profession, doesn't pay any sales tax. Why not? It just seems to me that we've got to say to everybody, look, we're in this thing together. How do we get the state of Wisconsin moving? How do we deal with the deficit? How do we take care of those who need the help the most? And to do that, we're going to have the courage to say we have to pay more.
15 seconds,
could,
right?
Could they be raised? Yes. Should they be raised? No.
Yep. Good night.
Good night. And good luck.
We will say goodbye. And I want to thank both you, and especially for getting up extra early this morning to join me on Channel 3 in Madison for the 6:45 Mini Week in Review program. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Joy.
Thank you, Joy.
Ed Garvey and Rick Berg with us today. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.